You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Mets your first listen every day. Locked On Mets is free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. Now, this will be a little bit of a unique show today. I started recording when the game was just 6-2 Mets, ends up being a resounding 13-3 finish. The reason why I started recording early is because today I am talking about the one trade the Mets should make right now to put them over the top, and that is acquiring Wilson Contreras from the Chicago Cubs. So in the first segment, I talk about what Contreras can do for the Mets. In the second segment, I detail the package that it would take to acquire him. I also want the Mets to get reliever David Robertson in this trade. And then we close the show today with my recap of what happened in this Mets game. While the game was still going on throughout, you will hear me reacting to some hits and some home runs as the Mets piled on a lot of runs late. Great performance by David Peterson. Outstanding offensive outburst. A lot to go over in this episode. Before we get to any of it, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter, at Finkelstein Ryan. You can also find some of my writing at justbaseball.com, where I work as the managing editor. Now, today's show, a little bit of out of order from usual, as we're going to close with the game recap because the Mets are on a West Coast trip. It's getting late, and I want to go to bed at a reasonable hour. So right now, as I am recording, I'm watching the game at the same time. Pete Alonso just hit a slow roller, beats it out, infield single. It's 6-2 in the top of the eighth inning. So we'll close out the show today with the game recap, but I want to talk about the one trade the Mets should be trying to make right now, and that's to acquire Wilson Contreras from the Chicago Cubs. Now, obviously, it takes two teams to make a deal, and we don't know what their long-term plans are for Contreras. He's going to be a free agent after the season, but if the Mets were to get him right now, they would significantly upgrade their catcher position, not only in the meantime while they wait for James McCann to come back, but even after that. In my opinion, this is the perfect bridge to Francisco Alvarez. Alvarez, the Mets' top prospect and arguably the top catching prospect in baseball, now that Adley Rutschman has made his debut, he's going to be up in Queens probably at some point next season, if not in 2024. So I don't think this would be a long-term solution, but Contreras is the type of high-level rental that a contending team goes out and gets if they believe they can win a World Series. And this year, he just would make so much sense for this team. He is dealing with a hamstring injury right now, but he's just day-to-day. They said he'll be back very soon. It is interesting, though, that the injury is a hamstring injury, because when McCann first went down, the name that I had tweeted out as, this is the one catcher they could trade for that makes sense to me because it won't cost too much, was Roberto Perez. And Roberto Perez had already torn up his hamstring. I didn't know that. And he ended up being out for the season with the hamstring injury. So I guess if I target a catcher in trade right now, the hamstrings start to go. So obviously that is the one elephant in the room here. But assuming his health comes back clean, if you were to make a deal, it just makes so much sense. This is a guy that for his career is a 259 hitter, 351 on base, 458 slugging, a career 116 WRC plus. Again, WRC plus measures hitters based on a league average of 100, so 16% better than your league average hitter. He's also finished every single season with a WRC plus over 100. So for a catcher, that means every single year he's at least been league average, if not slightly better, or in some seasons, way better than league average. He's finished with a WRC plus over 120 three times. Also has three seasons where he has eclipsed 20 home runs. What I really love about this trade for the Mets is Wilson Contreras rakes against left-handed pitching, and that is the biggest thing that this lineup has struggled with this year. So you address two things by making this trade, and I'll talk about the package would be in the next segment. I just want to focus on why this deal makes sense for now. So you look at Contreras' career numbers against lefties: a 278 hitter, 369 on base, 505 slugging, career 131 WRC plus this year. And I look down as it seems like Jeff McNeil just hit a home run. Live coverage of the game while I'm recording. Although if you're watching, you've already known what the score of the game is. Now it's 8-2. Mets are about to run away with this one. Back to Contreras, though. So this year, 297 hitter against lefties, 381 on base, 595 slugging, a 172 WRC plus, mashing against left-handed pitching. That's what this lineup needs. So even when you get a James McCann back, you could DH Contreras. He is that good of a hitter, particularly against lefties. He's the type of guy you'd want in the lineup every single day, and you probably would have him in that role where he would DH twice a week, and you give your backup catcher some run. This year, if you look at some of the advanced metrics, you know, 99th percentile on hard hit percentage, so hitting the ball harder than almost anyone in baseball. Average exit velocity in the 95th percentile, ex-WOBA in the 94th percentile, ex-slugging in the 90th percentile. He's hitting the ball really, really hard, bottom line. You know, and that expected slugging is 550 right now, which, if I'm not mistaken, is better than Pete Alonso. So that's just showing you how hard he's hitting the ball. You look at some of his other numbers, his walk rate over 10% is great. Strikeout rate only at 20.1% this year. So he's not going to hurt you that way. And it looks like we got back-to-back home runs as I'm recording, as Mark Canna just hit one out. So I don't know why I'm giving you a play-by-play when you're watching the game already, but it's distracting, not going to lie. You look at some of the offensive statistics this season when it comes to catchers, though. This guy leads all catchers in runs scored, WRC+, on-base percentage, slugging percentage, OPS, and ex-WOBA. This is a player that would change the Mets lineup. It would be a trade that would address a need right now because you have the catcher out. Although I know Mazika has done well this year. We're talking about a veteran who's going to be a better defensive catcher than Mazika right now. And you know the offense is more sustainable than this small sample size we've seen out of Mazika. And again, a good one-year bridge to Alvarez. Also in this deal, I like the Mets to get a pitcher in return in David Robertson. I want to talk about that layer of this and also talk about the package that would have to go back the other way in just a minute. But before we get to that, our partners at BetOnline continue to be the number one source for all of your betting needs and sports info. Find all the latest odds, news, and sports developments, including this year's basketball playoffs, Major League Baseball scores, fights, and even next season's NFL futures. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering information, from live betting to playoffs, esports, and more. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends and the action. BetOnline, where the game starts. Now, when it comes to trading for Wilson Contreras, to me, this would be your big deal of the season. This would be that big splash that you would want to make at the deadline, but you're going to, you know, make the trade a couple months early where you can get these guys for a larger portion of your season when you really need them. And so I think that Contreras is obviously the piece that moves the needle the most that you have to go after, but I would be really pushing hard for David Robertson in this deal, because if you're going to give up significant prospect capital for a rental, you might as well get that late inning reliever you would target at the deadline as well. And David Robertson, if you're not familiar, a long MLB career that started with the Yankees. He was originally Mariano Rivera's setup man for years, then succeeded him as their closer, has 142 career saves. Had Tommy John surgery in 2019, then had a setback in 2020. So really, this is his first year back to being himself. Last year, he had 12 innings pitched at the end of the season. Now you're looking at a guy with a 1.88 ERA through 14 and a third innings pitched with 20 strikeouts. He signed a one-year, $3.5 million deal with the Cubs. A guy that learned that cutter from Rivera and works off that pitch 50% of the time. Great spin rate on the cutter. And then he also has a slider and a curveball that he mixes in that are just really tough to hit. This year, there's only been one hit allowed on his curve and no hits allowed on his slider. The whiff rate on his curveball is 59.1%. 11 of his 20 strikeouts have come on that pitch. You look at the advanced metric stuff, barrel percentage, you know, expected batting average, expected slugging all in the 88th percentile or better. So you know, all the peripherals tell us that Robertson is back to being an elite lockdown late inning reliever, and the Mets are going to have to get that at the deadline. So if you can swing both pieces in this trade right now, absolute home run. I talked about what a trade package would look like on last week's State of the Division podcast for Just Baseball that I host with Aram Layton. You know, he's a guy that is a prospect analyst, so really do value his opinion on what a package could look like. And what we ended up coming up with was a framework of Ronnie Mauricio and JD Davis going back to the Cubs, and likely the Mets having to throw an arm into that trade as well to make it all work. So you're looking at two guys that just got called up from Port St. Lucie, and Mike Vassell and Carson Seymour, who weren't really on anyone's radar coming into this season. They just carved up hitters in low A, pitching in a league where they were a little bit older than the competition. For Vassell, 1.88 ERA in 8 starts. Seymour, 1.19 ERA in over 30 innings pitched. I wouldn't want to trade those guys, but if you're talking about a deal that can win you a World Series, you make the move and you throw one of them into the package, or really any lower minor league arm. There's really not a lot close to the big league level that a team like the Cubs would want. They'd probably want to take a flyer on one of your younger guys. There's some that I'm sure are untouchable, but there's also at least a arm that I know the Mets would be willing to part with. And then the two big pieces for the Cubs would be Ronnie Mauricio and JD Davis. And remember last year, the Mets made a trade for a rental in Javier Baez. They also got an arm in the deal in Trevor Williams, and they gave up Pete Crow-Armstrong. And now Pete Crow-Armstrong is showing up on top 100 prospect list. He's had a good start to the season. It's frustrating, and it would be frustrating to see two guys you trade in consecutive seasons, you know, thrive with the Cubs at the big league level, but these are the risks you have to make when you're trying to be a team that's competing for titles. And this year, if there's ever a Mets team that should be going all in, it's this one. And Ronnie Mauricio is a prospect that I came away from my road trip absolutely loving when I didn't really love him going into it. He's a guy that can wow scouts. And you know, this is a Chicago team that did their due diligence on the Mets farm last deadline. So I imagine they probably did like Mauricio. I'm pretty sure at the time there was, you know, this sense that the Cubs wanted one of the Mets, you know, top three, top four prospects, and Beatty, Alvarez, Mauricio, Vientos, and they ended up landing on the guy that was furthest away in Pete Crow-Armstrong. So I imagine they like Mauricio, and they'd probably want a piece like that for Contreras to make the trade now. They might push for more. And that's where you give them a couple extra pieces with JD Davis and maybe a pitcher thrown in. But to me, because you look at Mauricio with the fact that you already have Lindor as your shortstop, Mauricio might not even stick at the position because you have a guy, as the Mets are about to score their 10th run of the game, but because you have a guy that chases a ton, strikes out a bunch, there is a wide range of outcomes still. I'd be comfortable moving Mauricio, and then you throw JD Davis into this trade. That would clear an eventual spot for Mark Vientos. They have skill sets that overlap. Also, by getting Contreras, the Mets would already have another big right-handed bat added to the mix. I wouldn't even be surprised if they carried three catchers for a little bit, because you can DH Contreras then if you have the three catchers. So to me, it makes a lot of sense with a lot of different you know, layers to it on both sides for the Cubs with JD Davis. He sort of fills that spot that Contreras would be vacant as far as just their lineup goes as a right-handed bat. They could play him every day. They have the at-bats to go around. He's a guy that has, you know, really good advanced metrics as far as how hard he hits the ball. I could see a team like the Cubs valuing a JD Davis a little bit. And again, you know, with Mauricio being the big piece, it's a trade that I think does make sense for both sides. I think right now, if you were to really be honest with yourself, you're the Cubs, I don't know if you're going to get a better package at the deadline than Mauricio, Davis, and an arm to take a flyer on. So I think the Cubs would maybe consider it, assuming they're not married to the idea of signing Contreras long-term. And I think for the Mets, it's a no-brainer. Right now, you could get the catcher that would become your starter for the remainder of the season, and you would fill that need at the back end of your bullpen. While the rotation seems like the most pressing need, I think the Mets had great depth going into the season, and that depth is playing out well for them this year. Tonight, David Peterson was great, and that's what we're going to talk about next. We're going to go through this Mets game. I think I can actually recap the game before it's over. A little bit daring, but it is 10-2 right now. Maybe we'll wait for the bottom of the eighth to conclude, and then I'll come back on here and close out the show today. But our next partner has a product that I literally use every day now, which is Athletic Greens. For a while, I've been looking for a way to get more vitamins and nutrients into my diet, but I don't like swallowing a bunch of pills. I didn't know what I could do to try to get that intake I wanted easy. And I found it with Athletic Greens, which was the perfect answer for me because it's one scoop of Athletic Greens and a cold cup of water in the morning, similar to drinking your coffee to get you energized for the day. But with Athletic Greens, I'm absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens that help start my day right. This special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. They have over 7,000 five-star reviews and are recommended by professional athletes. It costs you less than $3 a day, making it cheaper than your cold brew habit. It's the single best thing you can do for your body in under 60 seconds. And to make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of their immune-supporting vitamin D and five travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/MLB Network. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/MLB Network to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. So the audience wouldn't know it, but I just took a little break. I was doing a little bit more prep for this final segment, watching the remainder of the Mets game. It is currently the top of the ninth inning with two outs. Mets are winning 10-2. I'm just going to assume this is a Mets win. So let's discuss what happened tonight as the Mets were able to crush the Giants in this series opener. And that is huge because, as we talked about on yesterday's show, you got Chris Bassitt going game two, going against Logan Webb. You feel pretty good about the Mets' chances to win that game with their new ace on the mound. And then that just allows the final game of this series to be a gravy game, assuming the Mets can get the job done. In that final game, you'll have Thomas Zabucki on the mound, most likely at this point. Zabucki only has one MLB start. No idea what you're going to get. So to get this game, massive. And it's interesting because the Giants got the scoring going early. You had David Peterson on the mound. Maybe some concern. Is he going to be able to face this Giants team that traditionally does very well against left-handed pitching? And Brandon Crawford, left on left, ends up hitting a two-run homer the bottom of the second inning. But what does this Mets team seem to do every single game this year? When they lose a game, they come back and win a game. When they give up runs, they come back and score runs. And they did that tonight. J.D. Davis ripped a one-out single in the next half inning. Patrick Mazika popped out, so there was two outs, and the Mets had a good fortune rally, okay? Because Brendan Nimmo gets an infield hit, kind of a bad defensive play, but I think Nimmo beats that anyway, where the ground ball was hit, and the first baseman and the second baseman, the pitcher, all converge on the ball, and nobody covered first. Still, though, the way he hit it, Nimmo most likely safe, even if the first baseman stayed home and the second baseman tried to make the play. Then you had Starling Marte hit a dribbler down the third baseline. You couldn't have bunted it any better, and suddenly the Mets had the bases loaded for Francisco Lindor, who is two RBIs shy of 500 for his career, and I'm watching now as it looks like somebody else just doubled in two. Mets up 12-2. Now Eduardo Escobar needed a hit, and it looks like he just ripped one maybe off the wall. So, again, this blowout just continues for the Mets. But it started in that third inning. You had the bases loaded, and Francisco Lindor, once again with the Mets getting a little bit lucky, hits a pop-up down the left field line. Darren Ruff was playing left field, a former catcher, not really a great fielder, couldn't come up with it. It ends up just barely bouncing in fair territory and then going foul into the stands for a ground rule double that scored two and gave Lindor that 500th career RBI. The Mets just got another hit, by the way. Eduardo Escobar scores to make it 13-2. I'm at the point where I don't even know who hit that. Looks like J.D. Davis got his fourth hit of the day. Wow, a lot of offense here. Getting back to the initial rally, that blue pit gave the Mets a 2-2 game. They tied it up there, and then Pete Alonso ends up hitting a home run that scored the remaining run, so a three-run shot to put the Mets up 5-2. David Peterson goes back on the mound, and those are the innings where you have to put up a zero. Your team just fought back and gave you a lead, and it didn't look like he was going to be able to do that. because he walked the leadoff better than he hit Wilmer Flores. Two runners are on, nobody out. Giants threatening. What does Peterson do as a great ground ball pitcher? He gets a soft comebacker. He ends up turning the double play. Francisco Lindor been so much better with his throws lately. He started to get his legs into it more. The arm's just looking a lot stronger. He's making throws right to Pete Alonso's chest. Does a great job turning that double play. You also saw him after he made that turn, sort of, you know, coaching up Peterson. Like, all right, let's go. You know, finish it, get out of it. And he did. He struck out. Oh, was it Evan Longoria? I believe, yes, Evan Longoria to end that inning. And he settled down from there. Ends up with three perfect innings after that. Got the Mets through six. I thought after five that he should just, you know, be set down for the day because he was facing the top of the lineup again. And, you know, David Peterson at 84 pitches, I just thought maybe better off holding him out. But the Mets score a run in the top of the sixth. Jeff McNeil got a hit. J.D. Davis doubled him home. And so you had a four-run lead. They threw him back out there. Good thing they did. He got through that sixth, retired the last 11 batters he faced. Ends up allowing just three hits, two runs with one walk. Had six strikeouts, 99 pitches to get through six innings. Has a 2.16 ERA through 25 innings pitched this year. As I've said recently, this guy's the X factor right now. Because, I mean, Trevor Williams as your fifth starter, it's not ideal, but the Mets can get by with that, or even Thomas Sabucky, but only if David Peterson is pitching better than a fifth starter, and he's been great this season. So if he can keep this up, if he continues to get his ground balls, if he's able to locate that sinker, not leave pitches over the heart of the plate that batters can do damage on, if he can get strikeouts with that slider, he could be very effective. And that's the thing that you got to like about this Mets team right now. They really do have, you know, seven quality starters in this rotation when they're healthy. You know, assuming you get DeGrom and Scherzer back, and that would push a McGill and a Peterson or even a Taijuan Walker potentially out of the rotation. They just have a lot of options. That's why I think they can continue to lean on their, you know, internal depth to make it through this stretch without Scherzer, DeGrom, and McGill, although McGill is playing catch again and could be back fairly soon. Now, when it comes to some of the other numbers or the other rallies the Mets put together in this game, you heard some of it as I was recording here. J.D. Davis had a great night, four hits, two doubles. You know, I've been talking. I know at times I've heard it from some of the audience. I pat myself on the back too much. But you know what? Listen to a podcast host that gets things wrong more, and maybe they won't pat themselves on the back. All I'm trying to do is continue our ongoing conversations throughout the season. And one of the trends I was discussing is how the Mets have been rolling out this wrong reverse platoon split here, where you have Dom Smith and J.D. Davis, who both have reverse splits throughout their career. J.D. traditionally been better against righties. Dom traditionally better against lefties. But they've been batting them based on, you know, your normal platoon of the lefty faces the righties, the righty faces the lefties. I've been clamoring for J.D. to get some starts against righties. And look at the game he just had against a righty. So absolutely outstanding from him. One of these guys has to separate themselves. If it's J.D., if it's Escobar, you know, if it's Dom, somebody has to take the reins here. You want to talk about being wrong? I've been dead wrong on Dom Smith. I thought he was going to be great this year. He hasn't been. But if J.D. can solidify this role, I like the Mets moving forward, maybe with Guillorme at third and J.D. as the DH. And who knows, maybe Escobar loses some time, although he did get that RBI hit late here in the game. And the eighth inning, the Mets really did put this one away. Pete Alonso leadoff single. Jeff McNeil hit a home run out to right center field. Then Mark Canna went back-to-back after that. Davis had hit his second double of the day and came around to score on a double by Patrick Mazika. And Colin Holderman ended up pitching two scoreless innings of relief for the Mets. Now Chasen Schreef is on. And we will assume he gets the job done as the Mets are winning by 11 runs. I don't think I can jinx this one, folks. So that's going to be all for today's edition of Locked On Mets. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you follow, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at FinkelsteinRyan. Follow the show at Locked On Mets. Thank you for making Locked On Mets your first listen every day. Now for your second listen, check out Locked On MLB. I'm laughing because Schreef just gave up another hit. Someone will get the last three outs of this game. And listen to Locked On MLB next, wherever you get your podcasts.